voice of Josie Falbo, local singing sensation. Her CD is called Taylor Street. It's the only one. You may not know the names Edward Young Clark or Bessie Taylor, but you will never, ever forget these two characters after reading For the Kingdom and the Power by my guest, Dale Lackman. Dale, these are two of the most astonishing human beings that I have encountered between the covers of a book. Who are they?
Well, Edward and Bessie were the owners of a PR and advertising agency in Atlanta, Georgia, called the Southern Publicity Association.
In the early part of the last century.
It was, I think they formed it in something like 1917, mm-hmm. and they were really brilliant marketers. And this is the early days of PR, the early days of marketing, starting to use the communications industry that was emerging. And it just happened that they were also very greedy and amoral and evil people.
Well, because they glommed on to one of the most evil people that I've encountered between the covers of a book in a long time, a man named William Joseph Simmons, who was kind of, and this, there's so many revelations in this book, he was kind of holding on to the kind of frayed Ku Klux Klan, wasn't he?
Right.
Can you describe, I think people think the Klan just grew out of the South and was prominent at a certain time. It was on its very last legs around this time, wasn't it?
Right. A lot of people think of the Klan, the original Klan, which was in the Reconstruction era after the Civil War, when they terrorized blacks in the South.
Sure.
And to keep them from voting, to try to, they were losing their grip on their society. That one died out. When Reconstruction kind of died out and the American troops left and things reverted back to normal, the Klan wasn't as necessary because there were other things to keep blacks in line. And also the U.S. government, because of the violence, had sent the army down and pretty much eradicated it. It wasn't until 1915 that Simmons decided to start the Klan over again. It's often called the modern Ku Klux Klan. And it was on Stone Mountain, Georgia, on Thanksgiving night of 1915. It coincided, if some of your listeners know about Birth of a Nation, the great D.W.
Sure.
Griffith movie,
yeah.
which was a glorification of the Klan. And he used that to start this this new Klan. However,
who is this guy?
Simmons?
Yeah.
Simmons was a guy who failed at a lot of things. He had been a preacher who had kind of gotten thrown out of his church for misappropriating funds. And what he was, a big important part of the story is that in the early 1900s, fraternal societies were enormous. It was a way of American life that almost everyone belonged to a fraternal society, the Elks or the Moose or the mm-hmm. on and on and on. And Simmons was at one point in 12 of them. But he got work as an organizer for a group called Woodmen of the World. And he eventually said he got sort of an epiphany that he was supposed to start this new Klan, and he did. But he was really a failure in a lot of things, and he was a failure at being an organizer. And by 1919, 4 years later, he was broke. He was mortgaging his house. He had about 2,000 members only in Georgia and Alabama. And really, the Klan at that point was ready to die. It wouldn't have lasted.
You would really think totally life support. There's
Absolutely.
Nothing that's going to save this
right.
gang of lunatics, but for the fact that two interesting people come into his realm.
Edward and Bessie were having a bit of their own problems with their agency. They were mostly working for non-for-profits. The Anti-Saloon League was one of the big ones, and of course, at about the time in 1919, Prohibition starts.
Sure.
So it's no longer a client.
Yeah, an absolute. Yeah.
And they'd also had a few problems with some of their clients, illegal doings. So they were a bit on life support, too. And one of their employees decided to answer a Klan ad, came back to them and said, we should think about this. And they decided, after doing a little research, that the Klan would be a good client for them.
What made them think that?
I think they had they were really very good marketers. They had a sense of the marketplace.
There's no question about that. Yeah. Whatever you may think of them as human beings, if you're thinking of marketing people, these two were good.
They had a sense of the marketplace. I feel that this story might not have happened had it not happened right then. It's post-World War I America. A lot of turbulence going on. Blacks had moved north because of the Great Migration. You mm-hmm. had soldiers returning to try to get their jobs back from World War I. there was just a whole stew of things going on in the socioeconomic, and what it boiled down to was white Protestants who were kind of losing their grip on America because immigrants were coming in, blacks were
right.
elevating their status, and on, and they
So it's a combination of what these two people played on. It's that combination of fear that grows into hate. Is,
yes.
that, is that simplistically put?
Well, I think the hate's always there.
Yeah.
But the Klan gives you organized hate.
Yeah.
And in a way, with the hood, it gives you
anonymity.
Anonymity kind of hate.
How did you come upon... You have a fascinating career. You used to work in this very building.
I did. I worked for the Tribune Company, right?
As my in television,
right.
mostly television. He was involved in the famous, God love him, that high-rated Al Capone, Geraldo Rivera, you know, treasure hunt.
The history of Al Capone's vaults, right?
And you never. This is your first book.
It is my first book, right?
What? How did you come upon this thing? Because I know. A lot of people I know have never heard this story. You have jacket quotes galore on this about people who find it a revelation. The title, again, for the kingdom and the power.
Read the subtitle at the top there.
The big money swindle that spread hate across America. Was there any notion of putting Ku Klux Klan in either the title or the subtitle? Or is that just too crazy, incendiary,
Well, I was very against having the Klan in the title and having the Klan actually in the graphics of the cover, because the very first words of this book is, this is not a Klan book.
Right, right.
It's really about these two people. It just happens
to be...
Well,
it's a book about... You know, before we take a break, I will tell you, Dale Lachman, it's a book about media. It's a book about newspapers. It's a book about advertising. It is a book about salesmanship. It's a book about hucksterism. What am I missing? It's a book about greed. It's a book about society.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of things. The Klan is merely the hook here.
It's the product they're selling.
Yeah, yeah. Let's take a short commercial break and continue on with Dale Lachman and his book For the Kingdom and the Power, The Big Money Swindle That Spread Hate Across America. We'll talk about the big money part of it and how the media... newspapers in particular were bamboozled at first. They eventually, I like to say that journalism becomes heroic in this, but at first they're just, they're pawns. They're pawns in this whole thing. We'll take a little break and come back and continue on. Dale will also be at the bookstall this Wednesday, the great bookstall in Chestnut Court in Winnetka at
6:30. Mm-hmm.
Good. That'd give them enough time for all the big crowds to get their books signed. We'll be right back on After Hours. We're back with Dale Lachman, who will be at the bookstall in Winnetka this Wednesday night at 6:30, talking about and autographing For the Kingdom and the Power, a remarkable story about greed, hatred, the Ku Klux Klan, easily duped newspaper people, and some good newspaper people. Dale, you were saying just before we went off the air for that commercial break that you worked for the Tribune for a while. You were involved in the Geraldo thing. But then you had a great, wonderful, I think, career switch, which actually led to this book.
Yes, it did. Yeah, I worked in the business for some 20 years, local level, national level. Had a wonderful time, but I was working on a TV show that got canceled, and it was at that point my wife and I, we had two young boys, very young, and she has a very fine career, decided that one of us should stay home, and it was logical that I would. And as soon as the boys got old enough to be in school all day long, I went and pursued a history degree because I grew up loving history.
Wow.
And
you taught for how long?
I taught for 10 years.
Wow.
And now I still substitute teach.
That's great. I
but
admire
teachers. It was a lecture at Northeastern Illinois where I got my degree in ethnic history, and that particular lecture was about the African-American experience, and the professor mentioned this literature. I took good notes, by the way.
Yeah,
everybody
obviously.
Out there, take good notes. he mentioned briefly about a man and a woman who helped recruit people for the Klan and that they had had an affair. And I said, sounds kind of interesting. So I started getting to the library and started digging, and then I couldn't believe what I found.
Well, you've done some yeoman's research here. I mean, this book is beautifully researched, and it tells in the writing and the notes and everything else. these people so easily manipulated the press, it makes me almost ashamed of myself to be a member of the press until we get to the payoff later on. Did they not?
Yeah, and this book talks a lot about a lot of the basics of PR. And one of them is, I think, the best free publicity is the publicity you can get from newspapers and magazines and things like that. And they kind of fashioned the Klan into a bit more open and acceptable organization. They invited the press into their...
As a kind of fraternal, as one of these many kind of fraternal organizations.
Yeah, they stood for lots of American ideals.
Right.
They were white
right.
supremacists. They didn't say they weren't, but
right.
they said they were all these wonderful things as well. And, you know, this New York paper that they first brought in gave them like 5 days of
a series.
Unbelievable positive publicity and membership in the New York City area. Spiked.
It worked. The figures, it's easy to say, well, they were dying with this many members in two states. These two jokers grew the Klan to, let's compare it before, you said roughly 2,000 members in Georgia and Alabama.
Alabama only, right.
That was it. And then these jokers come in and start to manipulate the message at the height.
At the height, well, they eventually get pushed out and the Klan takes over their thing and keeps it going. But eventually, and people, no one ever believes this, and this is, people gasp when I tell them that,
I did.
That there were 5 million Klansmen in every state of the Union. The reason there's a Klan history in every state of the Union today is because of Edward and Bessie. And they made enormous personal fortunes. And they eventually took over the Klan themselves.
When did they start to stumble?
Well, it happened with an expose by the New York World, Pulitzer's paper, in 1921.
Now, I feel proud. In reading this section of the book, I feel proud to be a journalist.
Front page expose of them for 23 consecutive days. And they did win the 1922 Pulitzer in investigative journalism, one of the first in that category. But I bring up some things also about they did it for another reason. They did it to increase their subscription rate.
No question.
So there's a real... you know, balancing act here between doing the right thing and making money.
In doing this, and you're not naive about the business of advertising or the media in this country, were you at all, Dale Ackman, shocked at how successful this campaign was?
Oh, absolutely. There's something that's not in the book, but I've read about since I wrote the book. For example, they signed this contract, I believe, in June of 1920. By August of 1921, Simmons came to Chicago and held an enormous rally. He took a caravan of cars out of Chicago towards
Crystal Lake
on Rand Road. And apparently there were 2,000 automobiles, and people would say that they passed by their houses for 2 hours. 10,000 Klansmen formed a giant circle of cars with their headlights on. This was at midnight on a farm. And they initiated 2,300 more people. And this
right
is
here.
14
right, yeah.
yeah. And this
yeah.
is 14 months after they signed their contract and hadn't even set up their sales force at this point. So,
Stunning. Who there was someone famous involved in that, or now famous, or then
famous. The farm, it turns out, where they were allowed to hold this was owned by a man named Charles Wigman. Now, are there some Chicago Cubs fans out there?
Yeah, this is WGN.
This is the 100th anniversary of Wrigley Field. Wigman built it.
That's right. That's what it's called, Wigman Field.
It's Wigman Field. It later was named Wrigley Field when the Wrigley family purchased it, I think, in 1921. We don't know if he was a Klan member, but he was certainly a Klan sympathizer.
Yeah, that's close enough for me. His relatives and heirs can sue me for saying that, but it's, the evidence is pretty sound. This book is also fascinating on the level of not just the Klan, but how easy it is to manipulate the public view. I think about this now when we're, you know, getting awash in political commercials, some of them not very persuasive to my mind. But that is one element of this book that I think someone who is, you know, in any business in this country, you know, selling anything would benefit from this, even shockingly. Mm-hmm. Why is it? Is the American public gullible? Easily, is it that easily manipulated?
Certainly certain portions of it are, and I think it, again, if you have the right product at the right time with the right pitch, it works.
Yeah.
You know, some products are spectacularly successful, some aren't. You know, it just depends on what nerve it hits.
Well, this product really was, so the product was hate, was it not?
It was just, again, at this period of time, white Protestants were feeling they were losing their grip on America. There were a whole lot of things going on. There was a terrible 1919 called the Red Summer, where there were something like 25 major race riots across the United States during that summer. All of these things were happening at this time. And they sensed it, they grabbed it, and 5 years later, 5 years earlier, it might not have been possible.
Yeah. You ask at the end of the book, and again, I am recommending this, cannot recommend it more highly as a historical document, but Dale Lachman, for someone who has not written a book before, is a very talented writer. The narrative drive of this book is terrific. For the kingdom and the power, the big money swindle that spread hate across America. Near the end of the book, you ask the question, would there be a Klan today, and there certainly is a Klan today, without Edward Young Clark and Bessie Tyler? What's the answer?
Maybe not. Somebody else might have been able to do the same thing. When I taught junior high kids, they would always say, hey, what if?
Yeah.
And there's actually a book called What If, and it's something called Contrafactual History, where if one thing hadn't happened, would everything else have happened? Yeah. It's a fascinating
subject. Well, it's a whole butterfly, so the butterfly swing
at
theory,
Oswald
too.
Mist, lots of things.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say, but actually, you know, if that son-in-law, or J.Q. Jett happened to be Bessie's son-in-law, had he not gone to that meeting, had he not come to them, maybe this wouldn't have been a book.
What's the response been? I have to believe, and I know there's some wonderful jacket quotes on the back of this book, but you must, in the writing of this, you must not have fully grasped the distinctiveness of this story, or the unique, that this story, it had not been told before, had it?
I always felt it was a great story. I told you earlier tonight, I had actually written as a screenplay first, because of my background in TV and film. Because I felt it had all those elements of a film. I always thought it was a great story. The problem with a first-time author is trying to get it published. It's a journey.
I found
a wonderful publisher
in
Chicago.
Woodhouse. Yeah. You found Sharon Woodhouse, and she has done you proud. It's a beautiful hardcover book. You will be at the bookstall in Winnetka at 6:30 this Wednesday evening.
Correct.
It's a story and a half tale. I don't know if you got another book in you, but if you don't, this is enough.
I hope I have another one in me, but thank you so much.
No, you may, with this new information, you may update it a little for a second edition. That's what we're all looking for.
Absolutely.
All authors are looking for a second edition. Pleasure to meet you. I think it's a great thing that you got out of the TV biz and became a teacher. I think that's a wonderful thing. And now you think of yourself as an author.
I'm starting to pinch myself. This is a brand new experience for me. And
I think the combination of this radio show and then the bookstall Wednesday night will do it for you.
Send
me an email and tell me you feel like an author Wednesday night about 10 o'clock, okay? thank you, Dale. For the kingdom and the power, the big money swindle that spread hate across America, it would be a valuable read for any of you kids who are in the advertising business. Don't misuse your power. That's my message to you. Don't misuse your power. Let's take a little commercial break, and then we'll get some news, and then we will talk to Hill 11 about his new play. I thought he was a book writer. We'll be right back.